Hey everybody, this episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Franchise Hockey Manager 3 by Out of the Park Developments. Hi everybody, Rich Grisham here. Thank you as always for listening to the Press Row Podcast. The first half of today's show is Brian Wiedeye and I talking about everything happening in the world of sports video games. And the second half of the show is me chatting with Franchise Hockey Manager 3 producer Jeff Riddles and Franchise Hockey Manager Community Manager Adam Burnett all about the just-released Franchise Hockey Manager 3. Yes, it is available today on Steam and through our website at Out of the Park Developments for $39.99. Get it today. It is the next generation of hockey strategy. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Press Row Podcast. Enjoy the show.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Press Row Podcast. It's me, it's Brian Wiedeye, Pasta Padre. With me, as often is the case, it's Rich Grisham. We're just going to drill through some of the latest news. I mean, there's nothing really monumental necessarily related to the games lately, but there's always developments happening. There's always some interesting stuff going on with the games that have been released or with those that are still a little ways out from releasing. But first of all, Rich Grisham, please, what have you been up to lately? What have you been playing? You've been enjoying your time with some sports games lately?
I always do. I'm always playing sports games right now. The same list, I think, from the last time we spoke, at least the top three. Number one is Pro Evo Soccer 2017. Mm-hmm. I recently downloaded all of the kits for the Premier League and La Liga and the Bundesliga, and that makes a great game even greater.
Possible on PS4, but not Xbox One.
Okay, good point. Yep, I have the PS4.
Just to put that out there in case anybody's unclear on that. Yep. But yeah, that's why the PS4 version of that would be the recommended one for Pro Evolution Soccer. But yeah, go ahead with your latest on the game.
Well, I started, you know, at first, the first thing that I did in Pro Evo was go through the Champions League with Atletico Madrid, who is my Spanish league soccer team that I root for. I can't exactly claim to be a longtime Atletico fan, but I have enjoyed them the most since I've probably been aware of Spanish soccer for the last 5 to 6 years. So they're sort of my club in Spain, and I made it all the way through to the semifinals before I was defeated. And then I went and downloaded all the real kits, and now I'm playing through the Premier League as Everton, and I added a couple of key players. Jack Wilshere is one, and Saul, S-A-U-L, is another, and I'm running with those guys through the Premier League. I had a nice start. I won my first three matches, but since then I have stumbled, and about 8 or 9 matches in, I am somewhere between 7th and 8th in the table, and have had a couple losses, a couple draws, Chelsea was a game that I was playing last night, and I was leading 2-1, and then they scored a goal in the 91st minute to tie. I could have really used those points. So I am just absorbed by the Master League in Pro Evo 2017. It is exactly the perfect scenario that I like. They do a nice job of making it a little easier to figure out what the most important things are to do, which in any of these international football management sims modes is important, because there's a lot going on between the transfer market and scouting and your youth team and international competition and multiple lineups and multiple cups that you're in. There's a lot going on, and this is the best version ever of just subtly but clearly indicating, ding, hey, here's a little light here. You should probably go take a look at this, you know, when certain players are being bid upon and things like that. So I'm just blown away by how good Pro Evo 17 is. It's great. I love it. And with the with the added kits, it gives it that, not the FIFA level of authenticity, because they crush it in that aspect, but even it does up the ante of the experience even more than it probably should. You know what I mean? It really should, but it does.
it makes it convincing enough to get by.
And whoever made these things, by the way, they look spectacular. These people, God bless you. I don't know how you do it. It's amazing.
Boy, you know, I've been amazed by that over the years, is the level of detail. I mean, on the PC side of things, you could find mods for NBA games, NBA Live, when I'm the last one that was on PC, like 08. You can still find mods for that, which will like update the game and give you everything you could imagine and look fantastic, or NBA 2K, and they'll create players who look better than the players that the development team has put together. It's fascinating how much skill is out there in the community. Yep. And how that can be applied under certain circumstances. So, yeah, so Pro Evolution, what else are you into?
Well, I am in the World Series as the New York Mets against the Houston Astros. I'm struggling. I'm down 2-1, and it is the going into the top of the sixth inning of game 4 where I last paused it and saved it, and I'm down 3-2 with Steven Matz on gas. Running on fumes, excuse me. What'll be interesting is once I'm done with the World Series, which is I play on the treadmill, I'll be done sometime in the next 3 to 4 days, is whether I keep on going in MLB The Show or if I get a new treadmill game. Because MLB The Show has been my treadmill game since it came out. When I say I'm in the World Series,
it was all the way.
Yeah, it was all the way. And it's funny how the calendar has really matched to where I have gotten, because sometimes I won't be able to do it for a few days, and other times I'll be able to get a couple of games in on the treadmill. Mm. Since I went to the playoffs, I played mostly just straight up instead of doing the player lock for the first 4 to 6 innings and then opening it up from that point on. And certainly everything in the NLCS and the World Series I've done straight up. It's tough, though. I don't know if I'm going to win. I've lost my pitching edge. I'm giving up more runs and more home runs, especially. Maybe my guys are just tired from a long season, but it's getting tough.
If the Cubs can come back from down 3-1, Rich, I think you could do it.
Yep, I think you're right. And by the way, God bless the Chicago Cubs for winning the World Series. That is unbelievable.
It's pretty cool, but you know, Cubs fans have to recognize now they're going to become hated. Once you get that first one, it happened to Boston, right? People rooted for Boston because they hadn't won in forever, and then they did, and then Boston fans became obnoxious and people turned on them, and you know that'll happen with the Cubs. It happened here in Seattle, where you know nobody hated the Seahawks until they won a Super Bowl, and then everybody wants to hate them. That's just the cycle of things, Rich. If the Eagles ever win a Super Bowl, well, you know what, Eagles fans are already hated. I'm sorry, Rich.
Well, I mean, you know, yeah, so you don't even have that going for you, which is unfortunate.
How is your Madden franchises going? Are you in just one or two? I don't know.
No, I'm in actually both. Two. Yeah. And they are complex. One of them goes at 2 a week, and one of them goes at 1 a week. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, are you playing the full games, or are you using, like, play the moment?
When I play the computer, I pretty much do play the moment, because what I'm doing is also typically playing that on the treadmill. Mm-hmm. And I am just not interested in playing defense in Madden these days. I'm not effective. It's not a problem with the game. It's just a problem with me, my mindset. I don't feel empowered playing the defense. I'm much more interested in trying to figure out how to move the ball and score on offense. But obviously when I play humans, I'm on defense, but that's how I do it. I'm not good. I'm not bad. I'm not as bad as I was when it started. I'm not good, and you know, as we talked about, with limited time. If I had more time, I'm just not really that interested in trying to figure out the nuances with Madden. I'm doing fine in my leagues, and everybody in the league is better than me. Not everybody, but a lot of people are better than me anyway. It's not like I'm gonna win the championship, although I still do enjoy all the competition. It's still fun.
Well, when you started playing the franchises, you hadn't played anything else. Is that the only way you've played Madden this year?
Only way. I haven't touched anything else ever. It's franchise games or nothing, which would explain some of my struggles with the game.
Yeah, for all the times you hear people say that the games don't change that much on a year-to-year basis, what happened with you is a good example. You went from playing Madden a lot last year to starting to play Madden this year, and it doesn't work the same way. You're not successful in the same way, right? You have to learn the nuances. You have to find what works and what type of strategy you can employ. And certainly that's been the case for me. My offense is different. I'm using different types of adjustments that I normally wouldn't have in the past on both offense and defense. So there's a lot, that you learn along the way. And then I've spent so much time doing these various scenarios in Ultimate Team that I think that's actually improved me some as a player in the full game context, because you're pretty familiar with, okay, you got to drive down the field with a minute 30 and no timeouts or whatever. So you actually get practice in those scenarios that can help you in your games. And
That's cool.
Yeah, that's kind of a side bonus to it that I didn't anticipate. And that but yeah, I'm in two franchises. The first one is with the Lions, and Matt Stafford got hurt in the second game of the season, and it was my game against TJ, and it was the third play on offense, and he got hurt and knocked out for 9 weeks. And one thing I like about the game is that it's challenging when you don't have a quarterback. Like, normally in the past, you could sign somebody off free agency and still do well. Has not been the case for me. And so now I'm looking forward to a high draft pick, and I'm fine with that. I appreciate that the game is challenging and that there are, you're going to get curveballs thrown at you that maybe you're going to have to adjust to. And that's been the case with that Lions team, and that's okay. So now I'm looking forward to next season there. And in the other one, I'm the Seahawks, and currently undefeated. There was a simmed game though that gave me a loss, but otherwise tearing it up there. So it shows you the difference between like a quality roster and a roster that's not very deep. So yeah, I'm having fun with that. The rest of my time recently has been Ultimate Team and Madden, but also I've reviewed a couple games. There was like the 100-foot robot golf, and then there's Infinite Air, which I recently reviewed and just came out a week, 2 weeks ago, within 2 weeks. That's one of the three snowboarding games that releases here in this final quarter of the year. So unusual. We've gone like 4 years, Rich, without a snowboarding or a mountain sports game, and then we have three that arrive within a month and a half of each other. pretty interesting. But neither of those games that I just mentioned I would recommend, unfortunately, as much as I'm looking for those different types of experiences, those kind of more purely fun or the non-traditional type of sports games that we used to really enjoy all the time. And they're so rare now that, I just was not very happy with either one of them, unfortunately, but that's the way it goes, developers, and you never know what they're going to be able to produce.
So talked about Infinite Air. Like, I haven't seen it, I do like HBO Studios quite a bit, as we've talked about here many times. The Golf Club is one of my favorite games of the PlayStation 4 generation. Love it. What happened, and can it be fixed? Because as we've seen with the Golf Club, they supported that for well over a year.
Yeah,
maybe even still supporting it for all I know. I haven't played it for a while. Can this be improved? You didn't like it, and what about it do you think they might be able to do something about? Because clearly they're going to see and hear all of the criticism.
Yeah.
So what can they do?
There are a number of fundamental issues with the game that I'm not sure are changeable at this point. So they took an approach similar to the Golf Club, which was kind of a simulation reflection of the sport. And that's great for golf, which is kind of a serene sport. But for an extreme sport like snowboarding, which that's the only one, unlike a few other mountain sports games, it's just snowboarding and Infinite Air. it just doesn't, it doesn't, there's not really the fun that you would expect out of it, first of all. Okay. But that all, there's reasons for that that tie into it also. The first is that it control scheme is needlessly difficult to deal with, and it's not precise. So the control scheme, it's just sticks and triggers. You don't use anything, any of the face buttons. Okay. And so in order to do different moves and everything, you have to combine the sticks with the triggers, and the tutorial is not sufficient in teaching you how to do anything beyond basics. And you just fail over and over at the start, and you don't overcome that in a reasonable amount of time. Like, I'm not against games being challenging. I like challenges. I like learning and improving. But when it's not fun, when you're just failing over and over and you can't figure out why, or you can't figure out how to get better, then I think you give up.
Golf Club was a very challenging golf game. Very different.
Is. Golf is simple, though, right, Rich? You're moving a control stick up and down, essentially, right? The combination of the various buttons and sticks in order to pull off moves is very different. Plus, you lose a lot of control over your character. So if you go for a flip or a spin, which are difficult to pull off first, it feels like luck, because you pull off the flip or spin as you're launching into the air, and then you really don't have much control after that point. You're sitting there and you're like, all right, am I going to spin? Is my spin going to go far enough that I'm going to be able to land it, or am I going to crash? And usually it's a crash. And look, I've seen videos of people playing the game that makes it look really good. Like, it's possible, right? It's possible if you put 10 hours into learning it and trying different things that you're going to get good at it. That's just not really reasonable to me, though. I mean, you have to make a game fun while you're learning and while you're improving, even if you're not good at it yet. And there's different ways to do that. You have lower difficulty type challenges at first, or you have tutorials that walk you through different stages of development, essentially. But there's really no way to enhance your capabilities organically with the game. And so that's really the biggest issues to me, is that the control scheme, which I don't think they're going to change, because they put it together that way for a reason. They're not going to go to just face buttons to pull off moves. There's also an issue with the content. There's not really a compelling campaign. What it does have is a great course creator, just like Golf Club had a great course creator, where you can, put your own runs together and then share them, and other people can race down them or try to put together scores going off tricks and all that. But my feeling towards it is pretty well reflected in other reviews too, which it has a 47 on Metacritic right now. It's not a very friendly game. And I think out of an extreme sports game, you're looking for something that's more accessible, something that's, I don't want to discount the possibility that a simulation snowboarding game could work. I think it could. But in this case, I think they missed the mark.
I always think about SSX, which was one of the most fun games that I ever played, period. And I don't know if it's possible to recreate the spirit and the fun and the visual pop of that game. But that really is, I think, what a lot of us are looking for. And the SSX series had a nice run. There are some great games in that series. Some more than others were meant more to different people. It'll be really interesting to see what direction the other two games that are coming out this year go with it. It's a shame to hear that this doesn't hit the mark with you and with what it seems like other people. On the other hand, I'm curious to see how they support it, what adjustments they make, because they made a lot of adjustments to the Golf Club. And so it'll be very interesting to see how this goes. It's a interesting decision to, like you mentioned, to make a game so focused on making you do the things a certain way. It sounds like it takes a particular kind of person to enjoy that. So it's going to be interesting how they move forward with it.
So let's hit on a couple other pieces of news recently, Rich. The biggest is probably, normally we wouldn't say anything big as far as, hey, here's who's on the cover of a video game, right? And you always get, that's not news. It's just a cover. Who cares? And for the most part, yeah, it's just a marketing thing. And the cover guy is going to represent the game and appear in commercials and be utilized in social media. And it's basically just about reaching people. That's probably not the only thing that the cover for MLB The Show 17 is going to do, though, because this is comparable to what NBA 2K did by putting Michael Jordan on the cover, which is they're putting kind of the face of the sport or the most popular or most loved player on the cover, and they're putting him in the game, and it's Ken Griffey Jr. And, you know, it's exciting for me, obviously, as a Seattle guy, as a Mariners fan who got to see Griffey's whole career here from the start to the very end. And he hasn't been in the show before. Now, he has been in other games. Obviously, he had his several games in the 90s that he fronted. And then he was in MLB 2K. As about 7 or 8 years ago. So he's not, this isn't some monumental thing as far as Griffey being in the game, but yeah, he'll be in as one of the legends. He'll be in Diamond Dynasty again, or not again, but along with other legends. And so the question becomes, with baseball not really having the sales potential of other sports. I mean, we've talked about it before, and MLB The Show sells close to a million copies a year, okay? Madden sells 5 to 6 million. NBA 2K sells 7 to 8 million. FIFA sells like 13 million in a year. So baseball doesn't have the widespread appeal that the other sports do. But Griffey could pull in certainly fans who were not necessarily buying the game before, who were not necessarily aware of the MLB The Show series, whether they haven't had a PS4 or not. So I'm curious to see what your thoughts are on this, Rich. Is this something that moves the show forward as far as its potential, or is it just a cool cover?
I think it has the potential to make for a memorable entrant. You drew the perfect analogy. NBA 2K with Jordan on the cover, the Jordan Challenge, really did something spectacular that had never been seen before. Mm-hmm. It would be great if this were something along those same lines, where a new way to experience MLB The Show with a player that so many people know and love. So that is really will be exciting to see if that's part of what this is. But regardless, yeah, Ken Griffey Jr. is a big deal. He's a Hall of Famer, one of the most dynamic players that any of us that have watched baseball over the course of the last 20, 30 years have seen. And by all known representation, has been a terrific guy on and off the field. Perfect kind of thing to connect yourself with if you're MLB The Show. It makes nothing but perfect sense to me.
Yeah, and they announced it super early, too. I mean, it was late October, and the show doesn't come out until the end of March. So you typically don't get cover announcements out that early unless there's a purpose, which is why I think a lot of people thought it would be a Cubs player, including myself, or an Indians player. To coincide with the World Series, which was still going at the time. Or it would have to be some really big deal. And that was the case with Griffey. And it's interesting to me that the show, which has budget constraints that maybe those other franchises I mentioned don't, they probably had to really pay out to get Griffey here. And it's going to be interesting to see the return on that. Are sales going to spike because of that? Or is baseball just a sport that sells to a certain segment of people? You have to be very specific. Baseball fans, the show is very much for purists of the sport. And maybe it's not going to expand beyond that very much, even with Griffey. Or is that going to get a lot of people who maybe haven't played baseball games in a long time, or people who casual fans of the sport and think baseball's too slow to play as a video game? I mean, we have all those things, right? We have those concerns from people. And it's why the show doesn't get beyond. Now, baseball obviously isn't as big as a whole, regardless, as far as television ratings and things. It's a local sport. It's a harder sell in the video game market. But it has such a window there in March where it's not fighting the competition these other games do. So having a big name like Griffey, having a big face for the game, I think that could be a real big success for them. So it just depends on how they capitalize that and how well the game turns out. And there's little reason to think it's not going to be a great game. So it's just taking like with NBA 2K, it was coming off of NBA 2K10, well-regarded game, but it blew up with Jordan. And then within that year and then the next couple of years, it became a series that was selling a number of copies that no one imagined a basketball game could ever sell. Maybe baseball will follow that route here with the show.
There's a couple other things too. The new version of the PlayStation 4 is coming out, the Pro, and PSVR remains potential for some of this too. Mm-hmm. Again, when we talk about Griffey being the cover athlete, maybe they've got something new, cool cooked up with PSVR, with maybe even a Ken Griffey theme to it.
Well, even if it's just a home run derby.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you think about one of the experiences that many people have cited being really good on the PSVR is the Batman game. I don't know what it's called, but it's basically, you know, Arkham VR or Batman VR or something. Mm-hmm. And it's relatively brief, but it's particularly good. And so something similar like that also bears in mind. Like, if they can really do something like that, you never know. I mean, they have a install base. However many PlayStation 4s have been sold is their maximum addressable market. And they are well recognized for producing an amazing product on that platform. And I think they're going to be positioned to really, between the PS4 Pro and the PSVR potential for that, they can really do something special. No matter what, it is a relatively finite audience, so they've always got to be sure to balance all the resources properly, which is easy to say and hard to do, but I have no doubt that they will continue to produce something great, because they always do. Like I said, I'm still playing it now. How many months from release is it? 9-10 months? Now, granted, that's me. I'm just this old, weird baseball.
It's a long season.
It is a long season, but I've loved every minute of it. It's an amazing game.
So you mentioned PS4 Pro, so I want to bring up, for its launch on November 10th, I believe, PS4 Pro updates will be out for both NBA 2K17 and FIFA 17. So both of those games will be able to take advantage of it. Now, it's limited in what that's going to mean, that they're going to higher resolution, maybe slightly better frame rate, and that's about it for these games. And you're going to need a 4K TV to really take advantage of that. But NBA 2K17, in its case, it's post-release support, other than getting a PS4 Pro update here. It's been pretty shaky lately. Still no roster update for the game. Apparently, a previous patch removed their ability to do a roster update, so they're waiting on that patch before they can actually do a roster update. It's Pro-Am mode, which they like to use for esports, is really, it's busted right now. It's broken. Ton of issues with that. But there is good stuff that has happened in NBA 2K17, because with the start of the season, their new Start Today feature, which is pretty interesting, that's now functioning. So you can start a franchise with, you know, on that given day with the current day's standings and statistics and start from there. So I just wanted to bring that up. as a few things with NBA 2K17, because we haven't really talked about that game much recently. But the NBA season is here, Rich, and it feels like the game is really old already. It's like,
well, yeah,
six weeks of the game before the season even started. It was kind of absurd.
Yeah, it's a different. It was an interesting choice, and we'll see what the results are with the sales, or you assume we'll see what the results are with the sales of it. I imagine the sales will still be pretty strong.
Yeah.
But we've seen some other big-time releases get potentially swallowed up. I'm not sure if you're following like Titanfall 2. Evidently, Titanfall 2 is a really, really good game that has been crushed by its competition, Battlefield, which is published by the same company, and Call of Duty.
Yeah.
So
yeah, well, that's a great example, Richard, why we talk about release schedules and where people are spending money, because it's not just a matter of is the game good. It's a matter of how consumers prioritize where they're spending money. And so Titanfall is, by all reviews, seems to be fantastic. But if that's number two or three on someone's list of games because they're more of a Battlefield fan or more of a Call of Duty fan or whatever it is, Titanfall is not going to sell. And, you know, they're getting disappointing numbers apparently in on that. And it just goes to show how NBA 2K can crush it really wherever they release on the schedule. But it's actually harmful to the genre that we cover, Rich, because that means people are less likely to buy NHL. They're less likely to buy
Pro Evo.
Yeah, absolutely. There's another one that gets squeezed out, which really is not even a blip on the radar in North America. And then it squeezes out the independent type games, which we were talking about earlier. And Infinite Air has more difficulty selling, because people are going to go towards the AAA titles where they feel a little more confidence. So, it's interesting to me that it's just we're in that point of the year too, where there's so many games. So it's not just sports games. It's not just shooters. Everybody, every genre is dealing with where are people spending money, and did we release at a poor time? And you saw Titanfall chose a really bad slot there. They would have been better off early next year.
And with NBA 2K, I haven't played it at all, not because it's not good, but because I've been playing the games that I was already telling you about. There's only there's only so many hours of the day you can ever find to play games. I will, now that as we're talking about it, I'm thinking, what'll my next treadmill game? If I don't play season 2 of MLB, which is a significant possibility, I will probably try to get cranking on my NBA 2K treadmill franchise with the Nets, which has been a tradition the last couple of years. And I've actually won a title with a completely crazy Brooklyn team that I put together, and actually streamed a lot of that too. That was a couple of seasons ago. That was fun. So I gotta get into NBA 2K. I know it's doing well. I know it's very popular. I'm always following what's going on, and there's definitely a lot of people playing it, enjoying it. I am ready to get into it, I think, because it's something that I haven't spent enough time with, but I'm not used to spending time with it until at least this time of the year anyway, so that's really that different.
Don't worry, you got until June.
Exactly.
Very long season with NBA also, just like MLB, so you got time there.
But you get into a groove, right? Like, or at least I do. When I'm in a real groove with different games at different times, I'm really just, I can play two or three matches of Pro Evo in a row and just really get in the zone. I can play a really intense game of MLB The Show and get in the zone. I can definitely get there. I'm not there with Madden. That's my problem with it. I'm kind of scattershot because I play it so rarely, like once every couple, 3 or 4 days. I've been in that groove with NBA 2K many times in the past. I don't know what game I played more over the last 3 or 4 years. It'd be really interesting in to figure out in terms of hours. Has it been MLB? Has it been NBA 2K? I split FIFA and Pro Evo, so they cancel themselves out. But I probably combined to play more Pro Evo / FIFA than the other two. But I just put a lot of hours into those franchises. A lot of hours.
So did you put time into FIFA 17? I don't remember how much. You played The Journey?
I have played some of The Journey on EA Access. because of the
game. They cut you off.
Well, no, I haven't even gotten there. It's just I've been doing a lot of traveling lately. So with all the games I've been telling you about, there's only so much that you can do. And I have played a few hours of FIFA The Journey. The problem is with FIFA The Journey, I don't want to go too far because when I do get the full game, I'm going to play it on the PlayStation 4.
Yeah, you can't on EA Access. They cut you off from the journey at a certain point.
Well, which is fine because it's probably not that long, which is, I think, a good thing. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think that's a good thing. It's fun to have 3, 4, 5 hour experiences. I'm cool with that. I wish there were more of that in the video game world.
Yeah, as long as you do something new every year with it, I think.
Absolutely.
Just like 2K has done, and I imagine FIFA will here. But the reason why I bring it up is because EA released their financials and they talked about how in a story mode
engagement is up, right? More people are playing it, right?
Yeah, and sales are up. Good. So I think what that does is it tells you, number one, that story modes work beyond, it's not just an NBA 2K phenomenon, right? NBA 2K has been doing that for four years. Now,
no surprise. We've talked about it forever. Back when the Fight Night game came out and it had a story, like these are the kind of things that, even if it's not done great, as long as it's done well to some degree, at least my attitude is, I'm totally cool with it. It's fun to do different things, and that's exactly why I think these are so well received by so many people.
And it works in two different ways. At first, it can be the main draw for someone to the game, someone who maybe wouldn't play through a full season, someone who doesn't maybe have a full understanding of the sport, or someone who doesn't have a favorite team or whatever, they can find something out of these story modes. The other thing, though, is it can be complementary to everything else in the game. So you may be mostly a franchise player, but you like the story mode too, or you may be a career mode player and you want to do the story too. It's just very, very different type of experience. And so when you ask, how do these games improve their sales? Because we've seen so many of them get to a point where they basically peaked and then they've started sliding backwards in sales, and they've been making up for it with digital revenue. And this is one of the ways you do it, is you put in a different type of experience every year. And as we go back to over and over, we aren't concerned as far as us, Rich. There are plenty of people who have the concern, but we don't feel it's a real concern that resources go into the ultimate team type revenue generating modes, because if the game isn't good, if the game doesn't have other things that people want, nobody's going to buy it, and then there's going to be nobody there to pay into their digital pool of revenue, right? So. And that's been like the issue with NBA Live. They can't make money on Ultimate Team if nobody's buying the game to begin with. So what you have here is great. They're going to have to keep improving their franchise modes. They're going to have to keep improving online. They're going to have to keep doing these story type modes. And then they have their revenue generators to supplement that all. So I think it's a great trend, and one that we're going to see it in Madden 18. I believe we're going to see a story mode there. We're probably going to see a story mode in NHL. It seems like a good fit there also. And if MLB The Show has the capabilities of doing it, because they have a smaller development team we always hear about and all that kind of stuff, if they're not doing a Griffey mode, I wouldn't be surprised if they're doing some sort of story mode or incorporating Griffey into a story mode. So there's a lot of interesting possibilities there, and there's a number of ideas they could have for various stories and different directions to take them. So I'm definitely interested to see where that all develops in the coming years.
It's a very different thing than their core competency, which is where the risk is. You know, people who make simulation sports games are not also people who write Hollywood movies or television shows.
Well, and we found out why that is.
So it's
with some of the dialogue and some of the stories we've seen in NBA 2K, we found out why generally it's a different crowd. But yeah.
So that's the other part of it, that I was impressed with the journey, what I played, and I played a couple hours of it, because it wasn't over the top, but it was it was interesting.
It's believable.
It was believable, and it was something where you're like, okay, I can see this happening, and I want to see where it goes. Like, I really liked being able to pick your club and how that was the club that you were the childhood fan of. That was all really cool. And there was enough sort of, that's interesting, moments that you make you want to continue to see what's going on. So I'm all in. I'm a fan. I like this stuff. I liked the original NBA 2K Spike Lee thing. I know no one else. I mean, I'm being hyperbolic. Very few people did. I liked it at the time and looking back. A lot of people say they liked it at the start, and then they all of a sudden went, like, actually, no, it's no good. I've liked it the whole time. But it's good. They've done a nice job. And it'll be tough for the NHL series to do this. It'll be tough for Madden to do it. It's not easy.
No.
And it'll be really interesting to see who does it, what they do with it, how much time does it become sort of the RPG level up, do the same drills, play the game, or do they go for the, you know, we're just going to do a 3-hour
movie.
Story mode.
Right? Interactive right. Movie, yeah.
Exactly, which both could be cool, too. So it's a lot, though. It's so much to do this. Now, obviously, EA has the resources to do it, and that's why you'll probably never see it in Pro Evo, and that's why it'll be interesting with NHL, which does well from what EA has said. But as we all know, it just like with anything else, it earns less than the other games, so you would assume gets less in resources. And these are resource-intensive kinds of things to come up with them, to execute them, and to get them out there. So,
all right, Rich, there's just a few days until the NES Classic comes out, Rich.
Miniature, I want one.
NES.
I'm going to get one. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get one through normal channels or if I'm going to have to eBay it. I don't know.
I hope
I'm
you don't have to it. eBay it because these things are going to be pricey.
I'm going to go for it. I mean, come on. I want this, and I'm blessed that I have, you know, depending upon how much people want for this thing, I can get a little money together and make it happen. I'm so excited. I want a couple.
Yeah, it seems like something that I would want to grab multiple of and then give away.
No, I want them, one for upstairs, one for downstairs, one for on the road. I
mean, how would you deal with
a lot of good
Rich?
Games in here and a lot of fun that can be had.
The biggest drawback, it seems, is that the cord for the controller is only 3 feet.
So
does that work for you?
I don't know. That sounds pretty.
You might have to get, maybe you can buy an extender, like a HDMI extender or something. I don't know what it is, or a USB extender. I don't know how the controller is plugging in, but it's only like 3 feet long, so you have to sit right next to the TV, which seems really disorienting to me.
Well, I mean, if you have a long HDMI cord, you can probably bring it close to you, but either way, that doesn't sound elegant. Yeah. But this is more of a, I don't know, but this is not sort of a permanent kind of a thing. It's a, hey, you take it out, you plug it in.
Yeah.
You play, you disconnect it and put it back away kind of thing more. So maybe it won't be that big of a deal. I don't know. It's. I just can't wait. I want one. I haven't played so many of these games in so long. The fact that it's officially from Nintendo, the fact that is it Tecmo Bowl or Super Tecmo Bowl?
Yeah, so sports game-wise, it's got Tecmo Bowl, it's got Punch-Out, and it's got Excitebike.
Oh, come on. That's great.
Yeah, three great ones. What game, maybe it's one of those, maybe it's one of the others, what game or games are you most looking forward to in that?
I'm looking forward to all of them. There's so many more that I haven't played than I have played. I mean,
Bubble Bobble.
Never played it. As we talked about, I think last time, you know, I had an
Ice
NES
Climber
when I was younger, but I had very few games because they were very expensive. We didn't have money for that. That's why, I guarantee you, if I were to talk to a psychologist, this is why I'm like, oh, as soon as this is out, I'm buying it. I don't care. $100, $200, $250, whatever, day one, give me. Yeah. I guarantee you that's the motivation behind this because there's so much more that I haven't played. And I know many, if not all, of these games have been available through Nintendo channels, through the virtual store. Like, I get that. But you just miss stuff over time. And retro gaming has never been a nostalgia thing for me for the most part because I didn't have that many games back then. And I've always really, up until now, even now, like I've always been a modern gaming fan. Like as the new generations dawned, I was always like, yep, I'm ready. Bring on the new. It doesn't make me not like the old, but
nostalgic.
I don't have the, the old days were the good days in video games. Like to me, what's happening right now is millions of times better than what they used to be. You can still appreciate the past, but
you'll see how much things have advanced by playing these.
But yeah, I'm okay with that. Like there are experiences I've never had. I'll be able to take this. My son and I will be able to experience a whole bunch of great stuff. That's another reason I'm really looking forward to it. I'm just can't wait. Cannot wait.
Boy, but no pre-orders, Rich. That's irritating.
I know. I want one. I want to do it. I want to hit the button.
But you know it's going to be difficult to find.
I know. That's why I'm like, you know what? I put it out there on Twitter. I'm like, whatever. If you get one, I will buy one. Right? I mean, I will buy one.
Well, if I can get a hold of an extra one, Rich, I will make sure you get if you don't already have one. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the list and Castlevania, I mean, Ghosts and Goblins.
All the Mario Brothers games.
Ice Climber. Of course, Zelda. I mean, all of those are amazing games. So it's going to be fun.
And it gives you save states. So there's all sorts of great stuff.
Got to be near the little console on that too, Rich, because apparently you hit the reset button and it saves it. And that's also the only way you can get back to other games. So to get to like the menu where you choose games, you have to physically press on the console a button. You can't do it just with your controller. Again, I guess because they think you're just going to be sitting right next to it. So
interesting.
So some weird quirks, but otherwise, I think it's going to be a pretty nifty little thing.
And it is the original Super Tecmo Bowl. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
So that's the four plays, right? Like, is it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like
two runs, two passes. Is that what you have?
Probably. Boy, it's been a while for me.
And will that have the license? Will that have the NFL license?
No, isn't the first one, I don't think, had any license.
I don't know. Right? I remember Tecmo Super Bowl. I guess that, now that you say
it. I think that's why they probably didn't put that in.
Yeah. That, I can't, yeah, they would, that I'm sure. I'm sure it doesn't have a license, so that's too bad. But, I mean, it probably doesn't make that much of a difference.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sure, in an upcoming podcast, we'll talk about our experiences with that and everything. But let's close it up for now, Rich. We'll get to your portion of the episode here following this. And thanks, Rich, again, for coming on and talking with me about what's going on here in the world of sports gaming. We will be back again probably next week. I've got a few ideas coming up, a few interview ideas, and then we're going to be able to look at things like holiday gift guide. Basically, we want what would we recommend? What would we want for ourselves? And then things like end of the year stuff with our sports game of the year and different awards we'll go through. And so we still got
a lot of
stuff planned. Even though there's only really one sports game with Steep coming out the rest of the year, there's still a lot to get into, Rich. So we'll be busy coming up, and hopefully everyone will still find the shows compelling enough, even without necessarily news on the next wave of games, because there's only a few in the near future. But otherwise, Rich, I enjoyed the show. So thanks again, and thanks to everyone who tuned in, and we'll be back again soon. But hang around. We got Rich Grisham coming up again for you.
Well, hey, everybody. For those of you who have been listening to the Press Row podcast for a while, you know that earlier this year, I took on the role of Chief Marketing Officer of Out of the Park Developments, makers of Out of the Park Baseball, MLB Manager, and Franchise Hockey Manager. And those of you who have been listening to the show for the last month or so know that Franchise Hockey Manager 3 has been scheduled for release in October, and now it is available worldwide. Franchise Hockey Manager 3 is officially licensed by the NHL. It's the first NHL game on the PC in nearly a decade. And I'm excited because I've got two of my favorite people here with me tonight to talk about Franchise Hockey Manager 3. We have Jeff Riddles, the producer of Franchise Hockey Manager 3, and Adam Burnett, the community manager. Jeff, welcome.
Thank you, Rich.
And Adam, welcome.
Thanks for having me on, Rich.
So, Franchise Hockey Manager 3. There's a bunch of people who are going to play this game that have played it before, and there's a bunch of people who are going to play this game that have never played it. Obviously, getting the NHL license will bring in a whole host of people to play a game like this that have not played a Franchise Hockey Manager game, and maybe, who knows, haven't even played a sports management simulation like Franchise Hockey Manager, like Out of the Park Baseball, like Football Manager. So Jeff, I'm going to start with you. If you've never played an FHM game or a sports management game, and you pick this game up because you're, you know, a fan of Press Row or you're an NHL fan, this is something you haven't heard of, you're a first-timer, what are you going to experience, and what should you look for? What are the kind of things that you would recommend somebody in that camp do?
Well, I think the core concept that you need to understand is it's a strategy game. It's not an action game the way you know the EA Sports NHL games or the old 2K Sports console games were, where you're getting right in and actually, you know, taking control of a player and controlling him physically in the game. It's about strategy. It's about managing your roster. It's about building your team up, making good trades, scouting, and succeeding that way rather than on your reflexes. So it's a little more along the lines of something like, say, Civilization or the Paradox strategy games, that sort of thing. So if you like that kind of game, you're even have a passing interest in hockey or just sports in general, sports management, you're the kind of person who, you know, calls into sports talk shows and criticizes the management of your local team, this might be the game for you.
Adam, you are a rabid hockey fan. You are a rabid Winnipeg Jets fan. You are Canadian. So just with those three things being said, you are probably, you know, the core of the target market for a game like Franchise Hockey Manager. So on the flip side of somebody who's sort of new to this genre, and this might be their first time, flipping on the other side, if you are the kind of hockey fan that you are, what does Franchise Hockey Manager 3 do for you? And how does somebody like you jump in and play this kind of game?
Well, I think from what Jeff was talking about earlier, it's the kind of game I like playing because, I mean, I really like getting in and knowing the rosters of my team, my major league team, my minor league team, knowing what the prospects are, what's going on. And I like setting up my team the way how I want it to be. So if there's somebody who's currently, for instance, in one of the minor leagues who I think should be on the NHL team, I want to put him there and see if he can succeed. And that's what I'm really excited about and really enjoy doing in this game.
So let's talk first about what the NHL license means. It's not, I mean, obviously what it is, it gives you the rights to use the NHL logo and the official NHL teams and the official logos and rosters. But I think
the uniforms.
And the uniforms, right. But I think
all the nice, pretty graphical stuff.
It means more than that, too, right, Jeff? I mean, just from we have been working with the NHL on this game. Like, it has. It's just different. What does it mean to you, Jeff? I mean, you've been associated with this franchise, no pun intended, as well as, you know, this kind of game for years. What does it mean to you to be officially connected with the NHL? What does it mean to you personally, and what does it really mean to you with this game?
Yeah, I mean, I was just looking at my old emails the other day and realized I'm coming up on 5 years working on this game now. It'll be the beginning of 2012, I think it was my first contact with it. And, you know, for all of this time, we've been hoping somewhere down the road to be able to get an official license, because obviously that brings a lot more, you know, it will attract a lot more attention to the game and get more people playing it. But I mean, it's just fantastic to be able to look at it from my perspective and, you know, see my Vancouver Canucks logo instead of just having to use a generic one or, you know, download one somebody's made. And just to have the NHL has looked at it and said, yeah, this is a quality product, and this is something we're willing to let you guys license. It's great having their seal of approval on it from that standpoint as well.
So one of the things that, Adam, you touched on, right, it's not just your major league team, it's your entire franchise. So let's stay with the NHL. What does it really mean when you start playing this game? And we'll stay with sort of the traditional game mode. We'll talk about the new mode, Path to Glory, which is really a streamlined mode. But, Adam, when you take your club, you're a Winnipeg Jets fan, right? You don't just get the Jets. You get the entire franchise. How do you look at it? What do you do? You know, when you analyze where you are right now, where your different players are, how do you assess your organization? And then once you say, okay, this is the kind of organization I want to run, how do you go about doing it? Do you hit the free agent market? Do you build through the draft? Do you take your youngsters up from the minors and put them up in the NHL? Do you look for some veterans? Like, tell me how you approach it holistically. What do you do, and you know, what are the things that you've done in the past, and maybe made some mistakes, and maybe made some good calls. Like, I'd love to hear that, how you approach it.
Yeah. To be perfectly honest, I mean, you need to have a mixture of everything. You need to be able to go out and grab that one key free agent who you think you're missing. And you need to be able to have a good set of draft picks to build your team from a roster from within. It's all of it's really important. And finding that correct balance is part of the challenge. And you have to be willing to take some risk on some players and go through some very difficult times. One of the things I really love about the franchise hockey series is being able to fix the mistakes of the past. So, I mean, one of our game modes we've just started that we're streaming is playing as the 92-93 Ottawa Senators, who took Alexander Dagl as the first pick in the 92 draft, which was not a great choice, as it turns out.
It looked good for about a season and a half, and then things didn't go so well.
Yeah, so being able to go back and go, okay, well, we know how he actually turns out, and he's rated okay, but maybe there's somebody else in that draft who, you know, might be a little bit more useful for us for the next 15 years. And being able to find that correct balance of going. The NHL also has a unique history compared to some of the other sports leagues, for instance, the MLB, where there's a salary cap, and that comes in, you know, and has changed the game in the past 10 years. And so you can't just go out and spend all the money in the world to try and buy the best team. You have to be able to find that balance and be able to draft and be able to sign those key free agents at the right time.
So I touched on it earlier. I want to talk a little bit more. So the traditional mode, it's called sandbox mode, really just lets you get in and completely take over every single detail of the game. Of your franchise, excuse me, from the top to the bottom and everywhere in between. But it is a sandbox. You can really decide, you know, I'm going to play every minute of every game, or I'm going to, you know, set my roster and set my direction and simulate an entire season and play 50 seasons over the course of, you know, a few hours or a few days or a few weeks. But the really one of the particularly interesting aspects of Franchise Hockey Manager 3 this year is called Path to Glory. Which is a, I don't know that I want to say that it's a mode explicitly designed for new players, because I think longtime players will also get a kick out of it. But Jeff, I mean, you've, as you mentioned, it's been almost 5 years. You're a producer on this game. You really have a lot to do with how it's shaped and what it means. Tell me what Path to Glory is, how it came to be, and what it allows you to do. Versus the way that, you know, sort of the only way you've been able to play this game in the past.
Somebody made the comparison the other day on the forum, and I thought it was a good one to, it's sort of like the hardcore mode in a role-playing game, like, say, Skyrim or Fallout, where you're agreeing to play by an additional set of rules that's a little that restricts the things you can do a little bit more, but it gives you a bit more of a challenge. You can't, in sandbox mode, for example, you can switch into something called commissioner mode, which lets you edit ratings directly. Or if you want to, you know, give your team a little bit more money, you can cheat that way. You can delegate more things to your assistant. If you're playing in Path to Glory mode, there's a very limited set of things you can delegate to your assistant. It cuts the list down from about 10 things down to 2. So you're doing a lot more things. You're doing pretty much everything yourself. So there's quite a bit more of a challenge. It's maybe, I don't want to say necessarily less forgiving, because even sandbox mode is fairly tough if you're not cheating actively in it. But the idea is to give you a little bit more, almost a role-playing experience. You're the GM of your team. You're only active for a limited number of years, and you're trying to build a record that's comparable to the all-time great. So if you want to go look into the game and you can see how Scotty Bowman did, how his career stacks up and how yours is coming along, there's a leader screen for general managers, and you can see how you're doing and doing from that perspective. And you can, you know, improve your manager character from year to year, depending on how well you play in the game. If you have a really good season, you get a few more points to distribute among your manager's characteristics. You can improve it that way. And, you know, there's various other things we've fine-tuned, sort of streamlined a little bit, so the flow of information is a little easier to deal with in a Path to Glory game. So it's maybe it's in addition to the challenging part, it's easier for a new player, for a new user to come in and pick it up right away without being faced with, you know, like something like the controls of the space shuttle, trying to figure out what all these different options do. Everything is set right from the beginning and in a way, and you don't have to really worry about figuring out going in and changing the overtime rules in a league, whether or not you should do that, whether or not you should adjust development speed, that sort of thing.
Adam, you became the community manager for this series in January of this year. It's now November of 2016. It's been almost a year. When you started with Franchise Hockey Manager 2 and Franchise Hockey Manager 3, what sticks out to you as the biggest change or difference when you play this game now and as you had immersed yourself, you know, in the series and in the community? What stands out to you as what people are really going to like the most and you know, in the community and you personally, you know, what really stands out to you with this version of the game?
I think the two things that really stand out are kind of tied together, and that's the new tactics system and the new player rating system. Previously, you know, Jeff and I talked a lot about on our streams and on the forums as well about how the player ratings in FHM 2 were basically between 3 stars and 5 stars because, you know, there wasn't very many guys that fell below that. Now, with FHM 3, there's a brand new rating system where it's all the way from 0.5 star to 5 star. So what that does is it really allows those superstar players to stand out, and that makes a big difference in the game. In terms of just the new tactics, there's so many different options you can choose, and that next level of customization is something really, really nice.
Jeff, you mentioned it earlier. It's been almost 5 years. Talk to me a little bit about your journey, right? When you first joined this team and were, you know, connected with, you know, Sebastian and the guys making this game to where this is now. Just describe that journey, where the game was then and where it is now and your, you know, your relationship to that.
Well, originally, when it started out, when the guys first announced it after they had been, you know, discussed it with Marcus and decided to make a hockey equivalent of the out-of-the-park baseball, which had been, you know, obviously very successful for Marcus. And there was a kind of a void in the hockey management market at that point. So they announced they were going to be doing it. So I had a little bit of experience working on this type of game before on a game produced by a different company, which we won't mention here. But so I volunteered to give them a hand with that, and you know, originally helping out with just the research. But then, you know, since I had that experience, I was kind of able to steer them away from some problem areas and point out, you know, different better ways to do things. And then as we got a little closer to the planned release date of the first version of FHM. Sebastian and Marcus realized it really wasn't shaping up the way they wanted it to work out. So I wound up coming on full time beginning of 2014. No, 2013. Yeah, it's been so long now. It's all blurring together. And I've been pretty much full time from that point forward. Well, full time plus a lot of the time. And, you know, we had a rocky start with the original FHM. It's really tough. I don't think people quite understand how difficult it is to pull a game like this together. And I know there have been, I don't know how many different people have popped up over the last few years coming up with freeware and shareware versions of hockey management games. And you'll get an announcement and then you seems to be rolling along for a little bit while and then you hear less and less about it. And then it sort of eventually drops off the face of the earth. But, you know, thankfully, because we had the Marcus's and Andreas's backing with Out of the Park developments on this, when we did run into trouble, we were able to keep going. And we got the first version out. kind of a rough start. We made a lot of changes between that and FHM2, and we got a much, much better reception last year when we released FHM2. And hopefully we can build on that now. We've got so many different things going on. We've added a lot to the game, you know, everything we've mentioned so far, plus international play, and obviously now the NHL license as well, which will hopefully, you know, allow us to step up to the next level and start, you know, getting the level of involvement that people have with Out of the Park Baseball, and building our fan base, getting more and more people playing. And the more we can do that, the more we'll be able to add to the game and do even bigger things in the future.
Speaking of international, stay with you for a minute, Jeff. So, yep. You know, we've talked quite a bit about, you know, the NHL, and when we talk about the NHL, when you take over a franchise, it's not just the NHL, but it's, you know, the minor leagues below it. But there's also definitely an international flavor, and this is something that has been asked for years, right? Not just some of the international leagues, but even, you know, the national clubs. You know, Team USA, Team Canada, all the European clubs and stuff like that. So talk a little bit about what that means, how those clubs can be used, how that, where that stemmed from, and the different ways that you can, you know, sort of enjoy some new ways to play, you know, use that game engine, but, you know, play it with, you know, the international clubs and other situations like that.
Yeah, it's definitely something people have been asking for right from the beginning. It's a little bit complicated to do, because the way international tournaments are, they're using the same players as the regular club teams are. So you have to figure out various issues with scheduling conflicts, and when does a player go to the international team? When does he stay with his club team in the NHL or whatever league he's playing in? That takes quite a while to sort out, and then there's adding all the data in for the various international tournaments. One of the things I'm proud of that we were able to do this time and is to go in such really enormous depth right out of the gate. It's not just the high profile tournaments like the World Cup, which just ended. And when you start a game, the World Cup hasn't happened yet. So that will be one of the very first things you see in a new game is the World Cup being played. And then, you know, the Winter Games on top of that, the World Championships. And it's not just, the very top level, like the where it's, Canada's and the USA and the Russians playing in that level of the World Championships. But it actually goes all the way down. There's six levels of World Championships, all the way down to Division III, which is, the Bulgarias and the United Arab Emirates and all these traditional hockey powers who can work their way up. You may get a job offer from one of these teams as you're playing, and if you take over as them, you know, you can try and pick your team and coach them to success. And if you can win a lower level tournament, that will promote you to the next level of the World Championships. And if you do really well, you can maybe drag yourself all the way up to the very top and watch your team get destroyed 15-0 by Canada.
I mean, United Arab Emirates, are you serious?
Yeah, they're in. They've actually got a program. It's actually a national league there. It's mostly expats playing, they've got some local kids as well. So you wind up with a lot of, you know, Americans and Canadians and Europeans over there working. Some of them wind up want to play a little hockey on the side. So they start up a league, and, you know, they teach some local kids. But they're actually participating. They're a full International Ice Hockey Federation member right now, and they are in the lowest level of the championships.
That's amazing.
So you can play as them, and we've got the full world rankings as well. So, you know, the bottom end, right? Yeah, I'm just looking at it right now. The UAE is number 46 in the world, just behind Bosnia and Georgia and Luxembourg.
They're behind Luxembourg. I mean,
they're Luxembourg. Behind them. Well, okay. For now. Give them time, though. They may catch up.
Adam, you, as I mentioned earlier, you've been officially affiliated with Franchise Hockey Manager for a year. What have you learned about making games? You know, you don't have the history that Jeff has with this. What have you learned? What has surprised you? Not only with making games, but also in the community. I'd love to hear what that's been like for you.
Oh, it's been a very wild learning curve. I mean, I guess that's the best way to say it. There's so many little things you don't really think of, and just making sure, you know, staying engaged with the community. There's a being with such a passionate fan base. There's a lot of people who feel very strongly about the game and want to see it succeed. So being able to work with them and make sure ideas are passed along to people like Jeff or Sebastian, so we can make improvements to the game, some of which, of course, you are seeing in FHM3, and making those connections with other people in the community. So whether it's some of our good YouTube friends like Sully on Tap, who does a fantastic FHM2 web series where he's been playing as the Flyers, and it's really fun to watch to see how he tries and wins with them. And because, I mean, well, Philly, they've screwed that up so many times. And just getting to know all sorts of different people about different things. So, I mean, that's really, really good. It's been a lot of fun.
Jeff, what's something we haven't talked about so far with FHM3 that stands out to you as, you know, this is something we've wanted to do for a couple of years. We got it in. We got it working the way that we want it to be. And this is something that everybody is going to enjoy.
A couple of things I can think of. One is just a nice little a bonus feature is the achievements. If you do something interesting in the game now, you can get Steam achievements for that. Or even there's an in-game achievement if you're not playing the Steam version. So if you happen to do something really unusual and unique, you'll get a little notification from that. And a lot of people like to be completionists and collect all possible achievements. We've got 50 of them. You can do that now. The other thing I was going to mention, just more from a gameplay perspective, we've really revamped the injury system in the games. Before, it was a little bit abstract. You would get a notification at the end of the game that one of your players had been hurt. Now the injuries are actually occurring in real time. They're happening in a logical way where, let's say, if a player blocks a shot, he's more likely to have a broken foot or something of that nature, as opposed to tearing his MCL or doing knee damage. Or if you're in a fight, you're more likely to get your nose broken than have something happen to your ankle. So the injuries happen in a little more logical way now. And once a player is injured, it's a little more uncertain about when he comes back. We don't tell you the precise time that he's going to return anymore. We give you an estimate whether he's day-to-day or 1 to 2 weeks out, 2 to 3 weeks out, and so on. And there's a little more uncertainty now. When a player is getting close to being able to return, he may or may not progress up to the next step from up to the next level. So you may be expecting to get your superstar player back in time for the playoffs, but then it rolls around a day before the playoffs. You get an email from your trainer saying, sorry, but he's had a bit of a setback and he's going to be a few more days. So, and you've got a pretty big challenge there to deal with. So it makes things a little bit more unpredictable for you as a manager, which is, a little bit more challenging.
Adam, anything else that you think you want to touch on from the game's perspective that, either newcomers or, longtime players are going to notice and enjoy with the game? And, with the game as deep as Franchise Hockey Manager 3, there's probably 20. So anything else that we haven't talked about that sort of stands out that you want to make sure that we mention?
Well, we touched on right at the beginning was the having the NHL license, which is a huge deal for us and out of the park. Just getting to have the real logos and uniforms. But along with that, we've also added, as Jeff said, Steam achievements, but we also added Steam Works, which means adding logos and uniforms in for some of the other leagues is easier than it ever has been, which I know some people are really going to enjoy. And that is a big deal for a lot of people. Other than that, the one other thing I think is also very great to have in is we have central scouting in now. So it's not just up to your own team for doing scouting.
Yeah, talk about the scouting a little bit. So, there's a lot of different games. Like, for example, when it comes to scouting, I'm personally really familiar with games like Madden, games like FIFA, right, for scouting. And sort of the more time and effort and resources that you spend on that, the better you have. How does scouting work in Franchise Hockey Manager 3? And maybe you guys can even talk about like a few specific examples of how you have used the upgraded scouting to come up with some good players that have done some good things for you.
Yeah, well, the basic scouting in FHM works a little differently than a lot of sports management games. The concept I started with is that in hockey now, it's you really don't find these, hidden players that nobody's ever heard of before.
Sidney Crosby isn't just hanging around in like Iowa, right?
It's not like a soccer game where you find some kid playing in some remote town in Africa and he's the next Ronaldo or something along those lines. With hockey players, everything is really a lot more organized. There's a lot more attention on these players from the time they're 14 years old. If a guy is a big time prospect, he's going to have a lot of people. He's going to have college scouts looking at him. He's going to have pro scouts looking at him. He's going to have junior scouts looking at him. So these guys just can't really fly under the radar. So the way scouting in the game works is all players start with sort of a consensus popular opinion about them. That opinion may be fairly accurate as to what their abilities are. It may understate their abilities or it may overrate them pretty badly. And it can be really quite a bit out of whack. So what your scouts are doing when they go out to watch a player is comparing what they're seeing with what that popular opinion is. And if there's something, if they realize that the popular assessment is wrong, it reduces the amount of error. So what's effectively happening is your scout is coming back to you saying, well, the people are saying this kid is great, but I don't really see it. So instead of calling him 4-star potential, I'm going to say he's 2.5 stars. And that's the whole idea with how you manage your scouts in FHM. You can send them out. There's a little too much detail to get into right now, but you can control how many players they're looking at. You can have them look at a very small, specific, filtered group of players if you want to look in one particular area. So you want to only be scouting goalies from the Czech Republic or something similar to that. You can have them be very focused. You can have them, you may not necessarily be looking for players for an upcoming draft. You may want to be, you may want some scouts being effectively pro scouts and looking at guys who are already playing. And so you can send them, you can tell them to focus on how good the players currently are, because that can also be, it's a little more unlikely for an older player to have the popular perception of him be a little out of kilter with what his actual abilities are, but it's still a little bit, there's still some possibility there. So you can send your scout out to find out whether or not that's accurate. And another one new thing we've done this year with player development is having the possibility of player potential changing over time. Before, the way it used to work was you'd get when a player was generated, a new one, or came into the game in the database to start with, he's got fairly fixed potential. There's some flexibility in how the development system can exceed that potential or potentially not reach it, but there's still some fairly strong constraints on it. What we did now is add the chance it's a fairly small but still significant number of players to completely break the bounds of what the normal potential system would be, and all of their potential, the bounds will actually move up and down as they're developing. So you can take somebody in the first round, with a very high pick, and the wheels might completely come off him in the next 2 to 3 years, and you wind up with a player like we were talking about Alexander Daigh earlier, where he looks good for a little while, and then it just doesn't work out, and you've wasted your first round pick essentially. Hmm. So, go ahead.
I was just going to say it's great to finally have that and be able to say, yes, you can find those hidden gems, but you can also get stuck with a bust every once in a while. And that'll happen to you and to the computer, which, adds a little bit of uniqueness to the game.
Yeah, good point. All right, well, Franchise Hockey Manager 3, it is now available worldwide on PC, on the Mac. You can get it just by going to ootpdevelopments.com/franchisehockeymanager. Easiest way to do that, just Google Franchise Hockey Manager 3. It'll bring you right there. You can, of course, get it on Steam, which is, of course, a way that lots of people love to get and play their PC games. Again, it's on PC and it's on Mac. It is $39.99. It is officially licensed by the NHL. It is absolutely has an incredible amount of depth playing with the NHL clubs and their affiliates, playing with international clubs, international leagues, going back in time. I didn't even really get to the historical aspect, right? Franchise Hockey Manager 3 is not just about picking teams today. You can go back in time and play teams from the 70s, the 60s, the
30s. All the way back to 1931.
1931. Are you kidding me? It's got the World Hockey Association. You got all those crazy leagues from the 70s in there. I mean, the amount of depth and breadth of this game is unbelievable. Check it out. We're very happy, very proud of this game. It has been a tremendous effort. It's been, wow, what an effort. I mean, I can personally say that I was, there are a few things in life that are as intense and demanding as getting a non-licensed hockey game to become a licensed hockey game. Our partners with the NHL are fantastic people, but there are so many different things that you have to bring together to make happen. So congratulations to you, Jeff. I know this is a long time coming for you. Congratulations. Definitely. Congratulations to you, Adam. Being the community manager of this great group of people that love this game is it's a demanding job, and having the NHL behind you has got to feel good. So congratulations to you, and congratulations to Sebastian and Marcus, Andreas, Malte, everybody on the team that has done a spectacular job. We're proud of this game. We're excited, and we hope that you go check out Franchise Hockey Manager 3, available now for $39.99 through Out of the Park Developments or through Steam. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And go check out Franchise Hockey Manager 3. We'll talk to you again real soon.